To begin at the beginning.
This is Liquid Lunch.
I'd like to propose a toast.
With Tim Rogers on Double J.
My dear, dear friends, sweethearts, welcome to Liquid Lunch. My name's Tim Rogers. You're on Double J. You know that. What you don't know is what the hell are we going to talk about today? Well, as you know, we're not normally an interview program, but some opportunities come up and we can't help but grab them with both hands. Today, we're going to be talking to Gene Simmons. Now, Gene Simmons' life story is as vast as it is atypical, child of Jewish-Hungarian parentage, moving from Israel to Queens, New York at the age of eight, attending Jewish Seminary School and earning a bachelor's degree in education, briefly teaching sixth grade in Spanish Harlem, then was an assistant at the Puerto Rican Interagency Council. Other jobs range from deli cashier to editorial assistant at Vogue magazine, but of course, he's the God of Thunder, the king of the nighttime world, and the reason this old queen fell in love with rock and roll. First show I ever performed was 100% Kiss at the age of nine, member of the Kiss Army at 10. Gene and the band have been a massive part of my life since I got out of the crib. Now, I do believe that Gene's musical acumen is highly underrated, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that today. With the man as a songwriter and a performer and as a critic, vastly underrated. Now, there are notorious and larger-than-life stories about Gene as a founding member of Kiss, as an entrepreneur, as an outspoken cultural critic, as one who's lived or established most of the wilder elements of rock and roll. But let's try for something more. I think he deserves at least that. Now, Kiss are coming to Australia for the last time on their End of the Road tour, November, December this year. But let's talk to Gene. He's a fascinating man who has travelled from the flatlands to the very tip of the top of the mountain and lived to tell the tale. Gene, can you hear us up there?
Oh, yeah. I can hear you fine, and you've done wonders for my ego. I feel much better about myself, I'll say that.
There's so much I didn't include. I know you're a well-educated man, but do you think you're largely an autodidact?
Well, I think it's fair to say, and of course these are semantics, but I'm not anti-semantic. You see what I did there?
I see what you did there.
If you start off with liking the sound of your own voice, that's a good beginning. If you can walk by a mirror and sort of be okay with what the mirror pushes back at you, you're okay. That's a good beginning. Self-esteem is important, and the rest is just, are you curious about life on the third planet from the sun? Are you curious enough to use that handheld device, which is free, incidentally, because in the past, the royals didn't want the uneducated masses, the great unwashed uneducated masses, to have access to knowledge. So the very fact that you can hold something in your hand, which is like a genie lamp, you just rub it, ask any question, and it gives you the answer, is really up to you. You have what the business folks call an inferred fiduciary duty to yourself. Be at the right place, at the right time, with the right thing, and for God's sakes, educate yourself. So the answer is yes, yes, and more yes. So everything begins with curiosity. Are you curious about life? How did we get here? What does it all mean? Do I have my mother's hips? And other burning questions.
Your mother sounds like a fascinating woman, as you've explained. Not an educated woman, but was encouraging and loving and a hardworking person. I remember a story that you told, so it's possibly not apocryphal, that when you showed her the first decent check you got through the band, that you laid it on the table. There are a lot of zeros there. She looked at it and said, "That's good. What's next?"
That's pretty accurate. It was with a thick Hungarian accent, and sort of the English translation is, now what are you going to do, kind of thing. Because she couldn't, by the way, understand who paid me and what my working hours were. She just could not grasp where all that money was coming from and who it was that was giving me. I said, well, lots of people, I guess millions of people are giving me money. And she just didn't understand how it went from their pockets to my hands. But the main thing that my mother taught me is a very sage, wise piece of business, and that is every day above ground is a good day. Now, that's easy to say, sort of like one of those, somebody comes over and pats you on the back and say, hey, every day above ground is a good day. But from my mother's perspective, she was in the concentration camps of Nazi Germany when she was 14 years of age. That includes our whole family, which were wiped out. So from her perspective, to have a kind of a good feeling about humanity as a whole, well, let's just say my mother has always been a much better person than I will ever be. She thinks that we have hope, humanity, and sometimes I don't. When I think of racism and intolerance and religious strife and endless wars and territory and just on and on and on, ad infinitum, ad nauseum, sometimes I just think we're just not meant to rule this planet. But my mother thought otherwise, and that's what she taught me. So the question is, once you've got enough money and whatever that amount is, if you've got fame, money, chicks or boys or whatever it is that floats your boat, will you get up at the crack of dawn and just, you know, make sure your heart is pumping through the day, even if it's for philanthropy or just running around the block? Sitting still is a sure guarantee you're going to be dying pretty fast. Your heart's just going to fold in on itself and you're going to die like Jabba the Hutt.
Oh, yeah. Tell you something, I think you'll understand when I say that something. I wanna hold your hand. I wanna hold your hand. I wanna hold your hand.
I know you've expressed the Beatles' Ed Sullivan Show, 64, was the big bang for yourself and Paul, at least, and for millions of other kids in the States. Were you introduced to R&B and soul music through the Beatles, or were you aware of someone like James Brown or Jackie Wilson previously?
No, I was lucky because I emigrated to the United States with my mother in 1958. Sometimes I think it's 1858. And the first music I was introduced to was Fats Domino, Little Richard, you know, the sort of the founding fathers of what became rock and roll. And then when I heard the Beatles, it was only then that I understood, oh, that's where the roots are. You know, Little Milton and Bo Diddley and so on. But it wasn't until I saw James Brown live that I understood his title, The Hardest Working Man in Show Business. There's an amazing video that I urge you to watch. It's called, oh, good God. But the Rolling Stones were on it.
The Tammy Show, T-A-M-Y.
The Tammy Show is exactly right, T-A-M-Y. Hosted by Jan and Dean, of all people.
That's right.
And it was the first time I ever saw a skateboard. They skated out on a skateboard. And the Rolling Stones were the headliners. But clearly James Brown was the king. And you see Jagger backstage, you know, sort of biting his nails, watching James Brown going through what human beings just aren't capable of doing, basically floating, doing splits and, you know, all kinds of amazing. The physicality of the man was unmatched to this day. And then, of course, the dances that you see Jagger doing, and God bless him, by the way, are, you know, sort of white, very amateur versions of what he learned from James Brown. And when you first hear, like when I play this music, because sometimes I have parties and I invite Gen Z and millennials and I put this music on, they go, wow, Bruno Mars. We're going, no, bitch. This is the Godfather. This is James Brown. Here's Papa's Got a Brand New Bag. Listen and you will learn, children.
He ain't no drag. He's got a brand new bag. But Papa.
Liquid Lunch on Double J with Tim Rogers and Gene Simmons. I can't actually believe I'm saying that. I am. Dreams come true. Van Halen, Running with the Devil. If you didn't know, our guest Gene Simmons recorded very early demos with Van Halen brothers.
I don't think that's quite accurate. I think it's called Discovered.
Discovered, I beg your pardon. Of course, an awful shock with Eddie leaving this planet last year.
I was always interested in new music because clearly the future always lies in that, and the future of the next writers and painters and so on. It's always going to be the future young people. And I went to a club with a girl named B.B. Buell, who was my date for the night. Yeah. Later on, she would have a child with Steven Tyler, whose name is Liv Tyler. That's right. But that night, we went together. My chaperone, if you will, was a guy named Rodney Bingenheimer.
I know. I went to lunch with Rodney. Yeah, he told me about Linda Ronstadt stories. I just can't forget. But anyway, Rodney, the king of Sunset Strip.
The king of the Sunset Strip, a seminal, legendary, iconic figure. There are three bands on. Of course, the opening band, I hear this music that just stops me in my tracks. And I thought, oh, there's like a guitar symphony, like guitar players playing in harmony and all this stuff. So I get up and go to the railing, and I can't believe what I'm seeing. There's only four guys on stage. One guy's got his shirt off, you know, long blonde hair, and he's doing acrobatics. Not like a rock band, more like an acrobat. He's doing flips and splits and all this stuff. Bass player sings like a banshee, killer drummer, and this guitar player who you just can't believe. He's tapping his guitars like a typewriter and all this stuff, but melodic and not blues based, more classical. I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. So I waited for him backstage, and in about a half hour convinced him to sign with me. I flew him to New York, produced their first 24 track 15 song demo, and a lot of those arrangements wound up on the first and second record. Needless to say, all that creativity, all that talent, that came from Van Halen. Not me, no producers, no nobody who sat down and gave them the fingerprint, the identity. When Edward died, he preferred being called Edward. CNN, all the rest of the pack called and wanted to know my impressions. And I remember distinctly my lasting and almost first impression of Edward Van Halen is smiling. In his videos on stage, when he met you, when he was talking about you, he was interested in you. Just a sweet soul, a rare human being, because we're all sort of engrossed in our own self and self-aggrandizement and other stuff. Edward had that kind of innocent, childlike quality. I've never heard anybody say a bad thing about him. Everybody loved him. Yeah. I did too.
Gene, hearing you talk as a fan, it's not a revelation to me. You followed your career and your writing. I was reading a compendium of Bomp magazine run by Greg and Susie Shaw. Bomp was a fanzine that became a magazine. And
I used to get it.
Yeah, well, there's a letter that you wrote. I think it's you. It seems to have your charm and wit, but it's extolling the virtues of bands like the Music Machine and the Easy Beats. The fan in you, from even talking about music these days and your care and concern for the way that music's happening, that fan's still there. I can hear it in the way, even if you're talking about Van Halen, if you're talking about even current stuff that's going on. But that fan is easily accessible within yourself.
Well, I mean, I can't tell you how excited I was when I first heard Tame Impala. You know, a while back, there was this Aussie group called Jet. I go, what's that? Do you want to be my girl? Bop, 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 bop. Wow. Where did that come from? And I never want to let that childlike quality, the sense of wonder, go by, because then you become really jaded. And it's easy to do that when you can buy jets and cars and houses and all that stuff. So my suggestion to anybody who reaches the heights is keep your snoot close to the ground. You're going to have a much happier existence, you know, go to clubs, see new talent, talk to people who haven't made it. Because if you just surround yourself with the cream of the crop, you know, it's like sitting around like the old English guys did with the East Indies Company, smoking cigars and no idea what was going on outside the world. There I was in India, surrounded on all four. Good Lord, get out there and smell a rose. Get out there and find out what life is all about. And a lot of it has to do with appreciating new talent.
One of my favorite aphorisms of yours, Gene, is dress British, think Yiddish. We managed to get both British and Yiddish in there somehow. Gene, I'm going to play a couple of tunes now that you've suggested. First, the great Jackie Wilson, Baby Work Out. We're with Gene Simmons at Liquid Lunch. Good lunch, Double J. We are with the great Gene Simmons, Christina Aguilera, Ain't No Other Man. DJ Premier behind the boards before Christina Aguilera, Jackie Wilson, Baby Workout, released in 1963, the great Jackie Wilson, 4-octave vocal range. I mentioned that the introduction about yourself as a musician, as a writer, as a singer being maybe just things are missed. I mean, your solo LP from 1978, these tunes, See You Tonight, Always Near Me, Mr. Make Believe, and my favourite version of When You Wish Upon a Star. And also you employ on the Arsehole record, you know, Waiting for the Morning Light and Beautiful and Now That You're Gone.
Waiting, by the way, Waiting for the Morning Light, I'm proud to say, was co-written with Bob Dylan.
That's right, yeah. I don't know why people are so blown apart by that. I mean, you wrote with Lou Reed for The Elder, but the experience with Bob seems like it was a time where you weren't the king of the mountain. He brought his guitar over. You sat with a couple of guitars.
Dylan came before I even learned how to pick up a guitar or play a triad on a keyboard or anything. I didn't understand how to write a song. And here I am, decades later, sitting down with him, and he's treating me as an equal, which is complete nonsense, because I couldn't shine his shoes. And I was so aghast at the fact that he was kind enough to even spend the time that I actually recorded the conversations he and I were having, the songwriting thing, and I actually put that in the box set, some of it, because it lasted hours. And he's going, "Oh, you're going to record, what are you doing now?" I go, "I just want to record your voice, please. You know, once you leave, I don't know if I'll ever have this again." It's just a moment of getting your feet back on the ground, that no matter whether you're the Pope or the guy next door, you know, the thing that connects us all is humanity. I know this sounds, oh boy, that guy's being so corny. But I'm just telling you that the most important people who you think walk the face of the planet have to do the same thing you do. They have to squat and poop. So just don't think of them as all that special. And maybe they work harder, maybe they have a little bit more talent, but the rest of it is just hard work.
So I've heard you describe it when people ask, how did you get to write with Bob, or how did you get to write with Lou? And you said, I called and asked. I took a chance.
I mean, what's the worst that can happen? They can say no.
Oh, Gene. I'm going to play a tune now by Arthur Brown, The Crazy World of Arthur Brown. This tune, Fire, which was chosen by Gene Simmons to play for you all today here at the Liquid Lounge, produced by Kit Lambert. And our mate Pete Townsend of The Horrible Who. Crazy World Arthur Brown. Fire. Lunch Day, we are speaking with Gene Simmons. We've been blessed by his presence. Kiss, that was from the album Revenge, Unholy, written by a former member of the band, Vinnie Vincent. When we were playing Gene, James Brown, Jackie Wilson before, two gentlemen who had business savvy, hard-won business savvy, at that time, they seemed to be regarded in a very unfortunate term as being uppity. Your business acumen and knowledge has been well documented, and you very proudly talk about it, and rightly so. But did you get some kind of kickback from that? Because I guess as performers in rock and roll, we're supposed to be young, dumb, and full of cumin. But business savvy was viewed, and maybe still is, as being the antithesis of rock and roll, when really...
It is true what you say. For me, it doesn't matter if people understand or approve that I like to read the Wall Street Journal and find out how things work. I do understand that you get more credibility if you're Keith Richards, who I greatly admire, and we met backstage, and, you know, an amazing guy. But I like Jagger's brain. I like going to the School of Economics I'm attracted to brain power. And you're right. Young, dumb, and full of cum is supposed to be much more respected. Everybody talks in glowing phrases about Sid Vicious. He was an idiot. He was self-destructive, didn't care about the fans, and didn't care about the band enough to be up on stage and be straight.
Ah, ha, ha. Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
Liquid Lunch. Double J.
We've already said
Liquid Lunch and Double J, we are with the great Gene Simmons. The Moody Blues, Go Now. Thanks to Gene.
By the way, very few people know that's the Moody Blues, but that's Denny Lane on lead vocals.
Denny Lane.
Then go on to Wings. Join McCartney. And Paul might have been, Sir Paul might have been, here comes the joke, you ready? Might have been a little inspired with Denny Lane, there is a front. See what I just did there?
Yeah, I see what you did there. I mean, hey, they were acquaintances before that song was written. You
may It is astonishing to me that in England, being such a small country compared to America, somehow they all knew each other. And that was always fascinating because in America, the Beach Boys didn't know the Four Seasons.
Yeah.
They were separated by 4,500 miles.
I guess,
it's sort of like people in Perth not ever saying hello to anybody from Sydney.
Well, we all kind of know each other in a strange country like that. I guess touring was your way of meeting other people. I mean, in the recent Behind the Lighted Stage Rush documentary, I'm a massive Rush fan. And the way that they talk about you and the way that you talk about them is very loving and very admiring and funny, really, because touring, you'd think, huh, them? With them. But I guess in America, it's touring that you get to know other people, yeah?
It is the best teaching device of sort of understanding the globe that we live in, because you meet people, especially as you go around the world, who from different accents, different cultures, different this, different that, and you widen your horizons. And in terms of Rush, when I first heard them, we're getting ready backstage, and they were the local opening band in
Toronto. Maybe.
In Toronto, that's right. And they still hadn't really sort of come out. And I heard, bow, da 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 da. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm going, what is that? That sounds, what are they doing? Playing Led Zeppelin before we come on? Same thing happened when I saw AC/DC in a club. Walked up to Angus afterwards. You're coming with me. We're going to go to a diner, and I'm going to talk with you. You know, Angus is a much shorter man than I am. I'm about 240 pounds and 6'2". And I took him out about 1 a.m. after their set. And, you know, in L.A., I was kind of a big deal. So all the waitresses came over. What do you have? What do you have? 1 o'clock in the morning. It's packed because it's L.A. And I said, well, my friend here would like something to eat. And he asked for a hot dog without the bun and beans. Yes. Okay. Okay, Jimmy. And I'll never forget. Angus picked up the hot dog and bit it from the side because he didn't have front teeth. I said, I tell you what's going to happen. Tomorrow I'm going to call everybody. You guys are coming out on tour with us. We got to show our fans what this band is all about. Just unrelenting, straight ahead, meat and potatoes, no nonsense, rock. And we need to hear more of that. And every night we'd be up on, you know, backstage, putting on makeup, going, oh, okay, tonight we got to be really good. Listen to that. And this was, just, of course, in the days of Bon Scott. So a former roadie, they couldn't find a lead singer, so they made their roadie the lead singer. That's rock. That's rock.
That is rock and roll. Yes, and with respect to our roadie friends and family out there who are doing it tough over the past year and a half, not being able to work. Going to see a whole bunch of you working on the Kiss End of the Road tour coming to Australia November, December of this year. Gene, thank you for giving me a life. You've been very generous with your time, with your mind. Thank you so much for being our guest at Liquid Lunch. And we wish
you
the very
sir.
Best, sir.
We'll see you out there. Stay safe.
You got it. Bye now.
I know life sometimes can get tough, and I know life sometimes can be a drag, but people, we have been given a gift.
Double J. Music makes you.